County of Los Angeles.
Murder in the first degree. Three counts.
It is your solemn responsibility.
Possible. And this man murdered Lacey.
Hi, you've reached Sean from Debriefed. If you notice, it's a new name. We've got some exciting things that we got planned coming up this year. It's mainly what we're going to do is we're going to really kind of start dissecting into these old cases. We're going to find some things that maybe some other sleuths weren't able to find. And it's going to be pretty exciting. So I'm ready to get started. I'm happy that we have our first episode of Debriefed with some of my favorite people in Madison.
Yeah, I figured. Figured we were going.
But we're going to take a deeper look into the cases that have some extreme justice to it. You know, we're going to talk about Ed Gein. There's new Netflix show on that that's super creepy if you haven't watched it. We're going to talk about Rodney King. If you don't know who Rodney King is, you probably are too young. And Google it. And then we're also going to be talking about the Night Strangler, right?
Stalker,
Strangler. I mean, yeah. I'm sure he did it all. He did it all. He should be called the Tooth Fairy because his teeth were terrible.
Oh, they were so bad.
So let's get started. The first one we're going to talk about, Rodney King.
Love it.
All right. So in March of 1991, Los Angeles resident Rodney King was brutally beaten by LAPD officers after a high-speed chase. An assault was captured on videotape by some bystanders. The footage sparked a national outrage, exposing deep racial and police tensions. So to talk about that is going to be Ryan Wheel. Ryan, what do you got?
Hello, everyone. So Rodney King incident and the riots that happened afterwards, it's really prominent on my mind because I was living in LA at the time. My dad was an officer in the court systems, and you know, it's a very important piece of California history and I think national history when we're talking about excessive force and just kind of bringing some of the police practices to light that sometimes people find themselves in, you know, some of the situations they find themselves in. And I think Rodney King's case is a really good example of how something as simple as a DWI, a suspected DWI stop, can go to something so extreme that it would cause national rioting.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, when the acquittal came, because I think what caused the riots is really important to know is that those four officers that were involved in the beating, they were acquitted in April of 92. So about 1 year,
later. Yep.
And it sparked a really massive outrage in California because, you know, across, especially people of color, had really, really bad experiences with the LAPD.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of mistrust because there's a lot of violence. I mean, so people had to deal with that.
And the workforce was predominantly white.
Yes. And there was a lot of tension sort of interrelated with that, with just even California's economy. Like we were talking about the causes of the riot itself. Well, there was already existing tension. There's a riot like 40 years before it in Watts, was another famous racially motivated riot, but there's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
So what led to, I wasn't alive for the Rodney King.
Jesus.
I'm a young one, but I don't really understand I wouldn't understand it anyway, but what was, I guess, the officer's reasoning for, did they claim that Rodney King was using force to them?
Or? So let's take a step back. So he was pulled over. He was on a high speed chase.
Yep. He had been drinking at a friend's house before.
He was on a high speed chase. It was, I believe, it was like 8 miles in L.A., 120 miles in L.A., which is a lot. Yeah. So they eventually caught up to him. And then I'm going to let Ryan continue the rest of the story.
Two officers initially approached Rodney while he was under arrest at that point. They had guns pointed at him. He was complying at that point. I think at some point there was some resisting with him going down, like he didn't want to get into a prone position to be cuffed or something.
He was drunk.
He was being annoying or something. Yeah, that definitely nothing that rises to the level that should spark the anger and brutality that you saw with the police. Basically, what happened was the four officers were primary aggressors, and they came in. They hit Rodney with their batons over 50 times.
Wow!
Kicked him
and hit him with their big steel. You know, the big.
Yeah. Police. When he was already down.
He was already down. So 50 times.
What were his injuries?
Extensive on his face. I think he had a cracked jaw. I don't know exactly what all of his injuries were, but he was pretty injured. They had to transport him to the hospital and everything. And it was caught on video by an eyewitness. Basically, this eyewitness video showed four cops beating him senseless and then 11 police officers on the scene
watching,
just letting it happen. And that was what was, I think, one of those things that is so scary to me is that, you know, when police officers see other police officers not doing the right thing, the Rodney King incident shows us we can't really trust them to do that in every instance.
Well, you know, you've got the old adage, you've got, you know, a few bad apples, you know, damaging it all, because I know a lot of really great police officers. And honestly, they have a really, really, really hard job, right? And the unfortunate thing is that, you know, this is not something that we have not seen since then. Like, we've seen George Floyd. We've seen, you know, Trayvon Martin. We've seen so many of them. And honestly, the unfortunate part is that it's been going on the entire time. You just got technology, you got, you know, phones and cameras and everything. Now you're able to just start to visualize it. So let's talk about, so they were arrested.
The police officers.
They were arrested. They were indicted. They went to trial, right? And they were found not guilty.
Yes, I think a really important note to mention about the state trial was that the defense attorneys in there, they got the venue changed. So it went from a black community to a predominantly white community in East Ventura, California.
Very important factor.
Yep.
Very important factor.
So the jury came back and this jury acquitted all four officers. It sparked enough outrage where the Republican president at the time, George H.W. Bush, pushed for the Justice Department to investigate. And that's where we saw federal charges against those officers arise.
Yeah.
And they were convicted of federal civil rights violations.
And what happened to them as far as that aspect is concerned?
They got sentenced to 30 months. And I think the four cops that were the major aggressors got sentenced for 30 months in prison. I think that they did work camp, though.
So they were
able to kind of do a diversion type thing.
And
in fact, the prosecutors appealed the decision by the judge for sentencing. They actually had asked the Ninth Circuit to give him harsher sentences.
They did?
Yes. And the Supreme Court overturned the Ninth Circuit, who said they should have.
So let me ask you this. Let me open this to everybody else. Is obviously you weren't around for this.
No.
Have you heard about this?
No, not really.
Oh, my God. Oh, and I'm sad. That's so sad. I mean, probably good, but sad, too, because it's something so major. Yeah. Why do you think that, if you've seen the video, and we'll show it on the screen, and we have shown it on the screen, it's so jarring. It's so jarring to see that. And part of me wants to show you to watch your reaction right now. That's Rodney King on the ground. He's laying on the ground.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And you can see it, all the hits and the everything, right? It's awful. It's awful. How do they find them not guilty? What was the defense?
The defense was that they used force that was permissible at the time, which
got it.
Unfortunately, it's being a jury decision. The jury, I think the makeup of the jury was really important. And
for sure it was.
And this is not for nothing. You know, my dad was a police officer, so I get how important they are. Yeah. I think that, you know, in that white community, I think the perception of the LAPD was really different from where if you went into the city of Los Angeles, things would have been a lot different.
100%. I mean, your jury pool is totally different.
I mean, there was some justice on the civil side. Rodney did sue the city of Los Angeles, and I believe he got, I think it was a $3 million verdict.
What he got was, I had it down, it was the largest verdict at the time. Civil verdict at the time. He's also the guy that also said, can't we just all get along?
Yeah, that was the biggest thing I remembered from it was Rodney pleading to everyone.
While the rioting,
50 people died,
63 people died.
And he was all saying, why can't we all just get along? That was his.
Yeah.
And I think that's really it touched me.
Yeah.
It touched me on a human level.
Yeah.
So I think I remembered that my entire life.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember it was yesterday because he's got the swollen eye and he's like, let's just all get along. And, you know, the whole story is kind of really sad because, you know, he ended up dying. I think he was at the age of 47. He ended up dying of an accidental drowning because he had drugs and alcohol in his system. And he never recovered. I mean, obviously, there was probably problems before that. But, you know, for me, you know, this is the power of empathy is that, you know, obviously he was doing something he probably shouldn't have been doing. Like we won't deny that, but it doesn't deserve to be what I just showed you and what was on the screen to be treated like that. And you have the opportunity to change somebody's life in that moment. Maybe he has an addiction problem. You could have helped him with that addiction problem, right? Where now you've just kind of ruined this man's life.
And you see that a little bit. You see intervention services like mental health counselors in New York will come if there's an incident where they think it's a mental health crisis, or, you know, you have a lot of options now that didn't exist back then. So things have changed a lot, I think.
Well, and I also think a case like that, or, you know, we could talk about many of the others that Sean mentioned. It kind of wakes up. I know for me personally, I've never had a bad run-in with law enforcement or anything like that. But, you know, it wakes you up to realize that, you know, people of color are experiencing moments like this that I've never been through or probably never will go through. Right. And that's something that they, you know, unfortunately have had to navigate for such a long time. And it's just so eye-opening to see, you know, Rodney King laying there and going through something like that, that, you know, a man went through something like that, not to say that anything that he did was justified, but the consequences that he went through did not fit, you know, what he.
Yeah. He essentially got a death sentence.
Yeah. No one deserved how he was treated.
Yeah.
And,
no one.
And I think that that's, you know, respecting someone's dignity when you're arresting them. I think that's so important. Like if you're a law enforcement officer, you know, that's a human being that's on the ground. So it's important. And I think that it wakes people up. These events, as bad as they are, they do wake people up. Like there were a lot of changes in California. You know, there was a Christopher Commission that was formed. They decided, well, we got to deal with economic inequality because the fact that people are fighting over very few jobs was what was causing a lot of the racial tension among different groups who thought, well, they're taking my jobs. They're taking my jobs. Well, it was a really complicated economic situation in LA, and they needed to fix that. And they reformed the LAPD. Like, they actually really did take a serious look at what they were doing with transparency.
Daryl Gates.
Yep.
Yep.
So things improved. Like, and I'm not definitely not, they're not like perfect, but these horrible incidents, you know, hopefully we can grow from them and see, you know, what can we do to prevent them in the future?
Yeah. It's tough because, you know, as a, you know, we're all up here, you know, privileged because we are white and we don't have to worry about, you know, if we get pulled over, are they going to make assumptions and do all of those things, right? You know, it's an important case in our history, and I'm sorry you're just learning about it today.
It's important to learn.
Cool. Next case. We're going to switch things up. We're going to go from Rodney King to Ed again.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody is on Netflix, there's a special on Ed Gein called Monsters Ed Gein. If you watch Sons of Anarchy, the Jax Teller on there, who is fantastic, and Sons of Anarchy is so great. I wish it came out now so they can use a little bit more cussing and maybe a little, maybe a little bit more cleavage than it did back then. But Jax Teller actually plays Ed Gein in this, and he does it so great that you would, it took me a minute to be like, wait a minute, that's Jax Teller? It's fantastic. So
did you know that he wore like a prosthetic thing on his eye because Ed had like a little slanty eye? So so he wore like a little prosthetic.
Mother?
Yeah, he wore a little prosthetic. And
yeah, he's fantastic. So let me give an overview of Ed Gein. In 1957, police entered the Plainfield, Wisconsin farmhouse of Ed Gein and undercover horrors that redefined crime in America. Gein had exhumed corpses, created furniture and masks from human remains, and murdered at least two women. He was declared legally insane. He was confined for life, but his crime gave rise to the myth behind characters like Norman Bates and Leatherface.
And Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill. Tell us more about Ed Gein.
Yeah. Definitely before my time, thank goodness, or else I'd probably be locking my doors every 5 seconds. But a little bit about Ed was he grew up with just his mother around. His dad wasn't around. Apparently, he was struggling with alcohol issues, and he had a brother. But the mother was deeply religious and very abusive in a way of, like, emotional, mental abuse. I don't think that there was any, you know, proof of any sort of physical abuse. I'm not sure, but I know that there definitely was some mental and emotional abuse. But his mother essentially taught him that all women except from her were inferior. And he grew up thinking that he couldn't drink. He couldn't, you know, have sexual relations with any woman. He couldn't go out. He was very secluded. So he grew up just in that farmhouse where they later on uncovered everything. And she ended up dying of heart failure. And that's kind of when his psyche really took a turn, because the woman who was everything to him was suddenly gone.
Yeah.
And it ended up being where that's what sent him into a spiral. And he started from that point on.
It's called a psychotic break.
Yes. Yes. He started then robbing graves and really targeting.
When you say robbing graves, let's take a step back, though. Don't minimize this.
Okay. He would go to graveyards and look for names. And it was a small town, Plainfield, Wisconsin. So he kind of knew who everybody was. And he would look for women's graves that looked like his mother. And he would dig up.
Graves that looked like the names?
No, like if he said, you know, Jane Doe, and he's like, oh, she was a brunette. She looked just like.
Oh, she looked. Okay. Because she knew he would know them because they lived in.
Small town.
Looks like mother. He would. That makes sense now.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. He's trying to bring her back.
That's exactly what he
did. Oh, poor Ed Gein.
I know. It's actually a really sad story. So he started actually digging up the dead bodies and would bring them to the farmhouse. And what they uncovered in the house, I guess, I can't even imagine being one of those officers, but they uncovered lampshades made of human skin, bowls made from skulls, furniture upholstered with skin, masks with faces. And I guess later on down the road.
Talent. This guy's got some talent.
Apparently. I mean, I wish we never knew about it, but, you know,
good with his hands.
Everybody has.
Rowan, I'm going to need you to cut your hair off for me. I need a bowl.
like that's the type of stuff he was doing.
Right?
But as they learned more about Ed, they found out that nothing was a sexual desire. He never, you know, raped the corpses or anything like that.
The movie show, the show shows that.
The show, and I'll get into that.
There's a lot, lot of misconceptions.
No, no, there's not. Okay. It's all true. If media, it's on TV, it's true.
Everything in the media is 100% true.
Wikipedia is true as well. But basically, they found out that what he really was trying to do, he was trying to make a full women's suit to become his mother and wear the suit.
When they find that out?
When he was arrested.
Oh.
And he actually...
He said it?
Yeah.
He said, I'm trying to make a suit of mother.
Mother. Yeah.
Okay.
This isn't funny, but yes, he was trying to, he would put together like, hey, a face from this body and a leg from this body and would mainly take the skin and he'd sew it together.
I mean, they're not doing anything with it.
I mean, you still can't.
Clearly it's illegal.
Yeah.
Wasn't part of the fascination too, though, like because the mom was so like anti any other woman except me, he had a weird fascination with women and like the female body and things like that. And he was like transforming himself into a woman technically. Yes.
There was a lot of speculation back at the time that maybe
keyword speculation. Viewers. Yes. That means that it may not be true.
There's a lot of speculation at the time that maybe Ed was a crossdresser or wanted to be transgender or something like that. But I don't think he ever confirmed that through his confessions or anything. I think he just said he missed his mother and wanted to become his mother.
Wish he could live in her own skin. Right?
Yes, he wanted to literally live in her skin.
All right. So I've got so talk about the sex thing. In Netflix, he has sex with his... mother, right? No, or the corpse? No, the corpses. The corpses.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I was creeped out.
It is. I will say, Ryan Murphy is a very, very good director, but it was a very hard watch. It was very hard to get through. But I think a lot of the parts were very dramatized, like in the show where he was dating that girl. Apparently, it was some
the one he got married to. Married to?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, apparently she was just a 55-year-old woman in Plainfield. He had never had any sexual relation with her or anything. Mm-hmm. And then I know the whole thing that I really took away from the show was when they were showing the splices of the making of Psycho at the same time.
Oh, yeah. It was so confusing.
Yeah, because you're like, what's...
I'm like, what am I watching right now? Yes.
Yeah, so they were showing the splices, and at the end, it kind of all tied together because it made you feel like when they showed an adaptation of when Psycho came out and the movie theater was completely sold out. And everybody was horrified, and it was disgusting, but everybody kept paying to go see it.
Yes.
So the real question is, you know, obviously, based on what we know about Ed, is that he struggled a lot with a lot of things. He actually was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But is the real monster somebody like him who obviously had a lot of mental health issues? And that's not excusing his crimes by any means. But are we the true monsters watching Psycho and all of these movies and even Monsters on Netflix? We're all...
No.
Feeding...
Nope.
There's nothing wrong with us.
There's nothing wrong with us. I mean, but like you bring up a very interesting point, right? I fall asleep to Dateline.
Yeah.
I need to hear about someone's death.
That's terrible.
To sleep.
That's a terrible way to phrase that.
But I get your point,
but,
though.
But no, like, I hear you. But like it's true crime. We're talking about it, right? Yeah. It's so big and it's so fascinating. And here's the thing. I don't think it's because he did all of the things that he did. I think it's just so powerful, the mind. Because it's like, I watch these things and it intrigues me to get into the thought of why and how and all of those things, because I'm like, I couldn't imagine killing anybody.
Right.
Right. And the guilt and all of those things that come along with that. And these people do it like there's no empathy and the emotion of how the brain works on the humans is what is totally interesting to me.
Is your question more about, is there a net gain for society? Like, are we really just exposing the worst sides of our conduct for entertainment, like the exploitation part of it?
I mean, there's some people that I will say that you just read online where they dramatize or they kind of romanticize these horrible monsters. And that is where I think is okay. But from the standpoint that Sean said, where it's like us humans naturally in nature, we're, mm-hmm. we're very curious creatures, yeah. And we fear the unknown. And the unknown is, how could somebody commit a crime like this? How could somebody treat a deceased person this way? Yeah. So it's very hard for us to understand. So watching a show like Dateline, Criminal Minds, even Monsters, all of these shows, it's for us to just say, maybe just educate ourselves. There are people out there that are capable of something like this. And I don't think that Ed Gein was somebody who, quote unquote, got off on something like this. I mean, he did in a sense, but I think his mental health really pushed him to that point.
I read that women who wear red are most likely to become serial killers.
Well, that's well, Ted Bundy's zodiac sign was a Scorpio, and I'm a Scorpio.
You're two and two boxes checked already.
But I would never drive a Volkswagen Beetle. Okay. Because
that's where
where I draw the line.
If Rowan asks to go to the basement, don't do it.
Yeah.
You're not safe. Keep her in front of you at all times.
Yeah.
Cool. Is there anything else about Ed Gein that we want to talk about?
I thought it was super interesting, though.
He was charged.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then he was actually found not guilty and spent a lot of his years in a mental facility.
So what happened was they charged him, and then they found him, you know, not fit to stand trial. So he didn't stand trial for years and years.
Yeah.
And then they found him, okay, you're competent enough to stand trial. Then they put him on trial, and then they found him guilty of reason by insanity. So then he lived the rest of his life in the mental facility and was diagnosed with schizophrenia and all those things. And I guess the mental facility had, because I did some more research on it, and apparently they said that he was like a stellar patient, that there were no issues with him. He always took his meds, never caused fights with anybody.
There was nobody dead around there.
Maybe that's a good point. Maybe he just needed mental health
treatment that wasn't accessible. I was about to say that, right? It's like, obviously we're not saying it's okay to go out and do the things that he did.
Right.
But like, if there's mental health problems, get checked out, right? Like, because that is scary, because as soon as you get the medications there, those urges to want to be in your mother's skin may go away.
Right. If you ever feel that way, go to a therapist.
Please don't act upon on those. It would be very bad. But if you do, Navi Law will be here to help you.
Right. Shameless plug.
Judgment-free.
But I also think that it's fascinating with him, as you think of the term serial killer and you think of the big names, you know, like Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, people that have killed lots and lots of people. You know, you think of a certain number that it might have to qualify somebody to be a serial killer. And there's only been, let me take that back. There were two women that were confirmed killed by Ed Gein.
So he's technically not considered a serial killer.
Right. But the cultural impact, I guess, from him with, you know, Psycho and all of those things, it informed us a lot about, you know, mental health issues and how the hell could somebody do something like that.
So let me ask you this. Quick question. Did anybody know who the hell Ed Gein was before the show came out?
Yes.
I'd heard the name.
You're psycho.
I thought that he was like a necrophiliac, though. I thought he was... Wait, is that the term?
No, actually, you're right. That's
okay.
The term.
Yes.
I thought he was...
On another episode of Debriefed, Necrophilia with Rowan.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I'm not co-signing on that. But that was my interpretation, was that that's why he was digging up the dead bodies.
I had no clue who he was.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all of these things are based on Ed Gein. Like, I got to learn more about this guy. And honestly, the show did not help me with that. It was between the psycho and the skin and all of the creepiness. It was very difficult, but it was very well received by a lot of other people.
I feel like shows like this can be, yes, entertaining, but they can also be harmful. If that's going to be the only way you consume facts about a case, because there are so many things in the Ed Gein, you know, show that they put out that are just simply false. He never helped catch Bundy. He never killed all these women. Like, it was a confirmed two. There was so much speculation and they couldn't get answers out of him because of his psychotic breaks. He didn't even know.
Yeah.
So there's just, it's also but here's the thing, though. Do your own research.
Yes, always do your own research. You can watch the news and you can get wrong information, though.
Yeah.
Right? So very, very, very interesting point that you make up is that, like, it's for entertainment, people. Yes. Like, take it for what it's worth, right? Enjoy it or not enjoy it, whatever you want. But, like, it's don't go out there and be like, oh, my God, did you know Ed Gein did this? It may not be true.
Yes.
Mother.
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 You see it. Yeah, that, I feel like parts of the show, like, it, just his voice, which I did some research on that. What's the guy's name from Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, I just know his real, his name what's in there is Jax Teller. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, why can't I think of it?
I'll find it.
Hunnam.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
wasn't it Charlie Hunnam?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yes,
good job, so, Rowan.
So I did some research, and that voice that he uses that we all know, Mother, that apparently came from, they didn't hear any of the tapes of Ed Gein talking. So he just, in his own actor mind, was like, what would somebody like this sound like? And he said, you know, he's got such a childlike psyche that he probably has a childlike sound. So that's why he started talking like that, because he...
Jax Teller may have some bodies in his basement based on that, because it's perfect.
I know.
It's crazy. Perfect.
Crazy.
It's crazy. Well, Ron, thanks. Good job.
Thank you.
The that's the end of the episode, folks. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Bye, guys. It was so good to be here.
We're going to talk about Richard Ramirez, who's also known as the Night Stalker. He terrorized California from 1984 to 1985 with a string of murders, assaults, home evasions, satanic symbols. He eventually was convicted of 13 murders and sentenced to death.
This guy's a real sicko, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about needing a dentist.
If the teeth were the biggest problem, he'd be okay.
I don't know the situation with the teeth, so I'm looking forward to it.
He's got some chompers.
Pull up a photo of Richard Ramirez's teeth so we can see exactly what it looks like.
The opposite of mine, hopefully.
Yes.
Those pearly whites.
I'm going to go that far, but...
So Richard Ramirez, this case has always just weirdly interests me. I know it's a weird sentence to say to have like a favorite serial killer.
And for the record, everything that Madison is saying is 100% fact. I know we were talking about the news, you can't believe it, but whatever she says is a 100% fact.
You don't need
fact checker.
Yeah, you don't need
I dare you. I dare you.
So I do know a lot about this case. I think it's interesting. He was convicted of, as Kelsey said, 13 counts of murder. He had 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. Hmm. And the thing about him is normally when we talk about a crime or like serial killers or things like that, there's normally a motive. There's normally an MO, like a normal calculated like thing that they do where you can connect. Okay. He likes blonde, skinny women who have blue eyes and 2 sons because that reminds him of his own mother, like something like that.
Like targeting a specific type of group.
His teeth are disgusting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know.
He looks like a ghoul. I mean, and this guy's kind of a human ghoul.
So with him, the ages of the victims ranged as low as 9 years old and as high as 83.
9 to 83?
Yeah.
Jesus. He was a sicko.
So with the children, he didn't kill them. He would just kind of kidnap them, assault them, and then let them go. And for, 20
sounds
to
like parenting.
20 oh. to 83, he would break into the house, maybe assault them as well, kill them, burglarize the house, things like that, and leave. And again,
and here's the thing. He wasn't clean about any of this.
No.
He left footprints. Yeah. He left. It's crazy. Sorry.
So, and what's also interesting, too, is there were.
He didn't take his shoes off. He didn't take his shoes off when he went and robbed them.
Like, so rude. Was he not like, okay, that's the rude part, really?
Not killing them?
Yeah. But like, was he not afraid of being caught?
He kidnapped a lot. Too.
And so here's the issue, too, is a lot of victims were left alive. Yeah. Like, obviously,
you think intentionally?
I don't believe so. But a lot of
you think he thought they were dead?
So, like, I know there's one case in particular. He broke into a home of a husband and a wife, and the husband died. And as he died, he had the phone dialing 911. And so the paramedics were able to get there in enough time to save the wife. Hmm. So she lived. Or there's another one. He tried to shoot at a woman and the bullet literally bounced off the keys in her hand. It didn't hit her. She looked at him and she goes, "You already shot me once. You're really going to do it again?" And he took off running. So, like, there's just weird instances where they were left alive. All the kids that he kidnapped and assaulted, alive. So there's, yeah.
I tell you, though.
It was a metal key.
There's no one that made L.A. more afraid. Like, my mom still has.
Other than the LAPD? Yeah.
No, between the LAPD and the Night Stalker, the 90s weren't a good time for L.A.
But, like, explains a lot, Ryan.
I know. That was my era. But, yeah, no. He would terrify everyone.
Yeah, because there was no. There were. Anyone could have been the victim.
He and was so, sloppy, and it could have been anybody.
Maybe your kids.
Could have been Danny.
So.
Smile, Danny. Oh, okay.
I think what's interesting is, like, his life as a kid, and this is what has always interested me about this case, is kind of the psychological things behind it. And, you know, I'm sure all of us in this room have enough trauma within our childhood to be like, yeah, you know, we could go out and want to kill 30 people and call it a day, but we don't.
I would like to go on the record by saying I have never once.
Same. She's looking same
at me this same entire time.
I guess this is.
We're good.
Time.
I don't know.
I guess this might be an abnormal thought then. But no, okay. Richard, he was the youngest of five kids. So he grew up watching
sisters, brothers.
Both.
Okay.
I believe it was two sisters and two other brothers.
Okay.
So he would watch his siblings grow up in school, and he would watch how they misbehaved and how his parents reacted. And there was one in particular, his older brother, Ruben. Ruben was terrible in school. He would burglarize houses and I have in quotes, sniff glue. And just at 2 years old.
So Tommy boy.
Started early.
Just at 2 years old, Richard listened to Ruben get beat by his dad after he got bailed out of jail for robbing someone. And, you know, there was this model as a kid of disobedience leads to rage and violence and repercussions. And you see that in his murders when he's an adult of when they try and fight back, when they try and, you know, disobey him. He gets more violent. He stabs them repeatedly to the point of overkill or like it's.
Didn't he drive them around in a van, like a torture van?
No,
he didn't.
Being in a van is torture.
Fair enough.
Yes. There's never any candy.
Oh,
I know.
The only people he really drove around were like the kids.
Okay.
But he never really tortured them.
Did he have an accomplice?
No, it was just him.
Huh.
And then I think another interesting aspect of his childhood.
Fake news, Ryan.
I know.
Is his cousin. His cousin fought in Vietnam. And when he came home.
What was his cousin's name?
Miguel/Mike.
Thank you for your service, Miguel.
You are not going to want to say that after this next part. So he fought in Vietnam. And when he came home, he was showing a young teenage, maybe preteen, Richard. These photos, these Polaroids of them assaulting these Vietnamese women and then actually beheading them afterwards. And when he came home, he was a war hero. He was given badges of honor and things like that. And so
that's what he saw.
This is what you see of this man who did all these horrible things to women.
Yeah.
Honored.
Yeah.
Once again, it's kind of validating that terrible behavior. And he even sat, he was in Miguel's kitchen and Miguel was arguing with his wife about something. I believe the wife was upset that Miguel didn't have a job.
Well,
following
that's
the
valid.
War.
That's valid.
Yeah.
Miguel was a broke ass.
And so Miguel literally walked over. I don't know why the gun was left in the fridge, but it was in the fridge. He walked over to
gun in the fridge.
Yes. He walked over to the fridge, opened the door, pulled out the gun and shot his wife.
and killed her.
Miguel is a dick.
So
yeah,
it's just there's all these models of, for him as a kid where these bad behaviors are just reinforced, and
it just sounds like so much instability.
Yeah.
I think looking at his crimes and the way that he was so unstable, just all over the place with the victim ages,
yeah,
with, you know, him leaving the freaking shoes on.
I think the culture of violence in the family is a big part of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's he was like, a very violent man with his crimes. Yeah. And there's also, I know there's a big wow factor around his cases of the religion, and he drew pentagrams in blood on the walls or in lipstick. And I know in court, he had a pentagram on his palm, and he said, like, "Hail Satan." I don't know if it was fully a tattoo, but it was on his palm.
Wasn't there like a cultural phenomenon going on at the time? Satan, the what is it called? It has to do with like the fear of Satanism. Like, they're in the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. like, there used to
like
be...
Like the Charles Manson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember what there was an actual, like, term for it, but, like, it was, like, the focus on Satanism was, like, a big part of a lot of these issues. Like,
I think it's interesting of, I feel like there's a part of a religious trauma, which kind of ties into Ed Gein, of, you know, when Richard was home, a form of punishment is he would be tied to a cross overnight in the graveyard next door.
Oh my God.
And
Richard would?
Yes. Like, his parents would tie him.
No wonder why he killed people.
So it's, that's but really again, it's things like that.
Jesus,
no
crazy.
Wonder, no wonder why he killed all these people. And that's what's so fascinating to me is you look at these people who do such horrible things, and then you look at their childhood and you're like, no wonder.
Yes.
All these terrible
again,
things
it obviously bad things happen to all of us, like you said in the beginning. It doesn't lead us to murder,
yes.
Right? But it's crazy that they have these experiences and then they replicate that experience to the next level.
Yeah.
Right? It's crazy. It's like, scary.
You can't just double it and give it to the next person.
Right?
You gotta go to therapy.
gotta get fixed. Michael Scrub, we gotta get you.
Yeah. Shout out. So because his, you know, like what he was doing was so all over the place, like it was so hard to first connect the dots that these were all him. And then second,
that's why he never really got caught, right? Because he was in between police.
He was so many different
jurisdictions.
Areas, yes. And so what tied them all together was a shoe print.
Damn, I thought it was going to be the teeth.
No, but the teeth do come back into play.
Okay.
No, it was a shoe print. They found, you know, outside of the window where he lifted the window to go in and kidnap a kid in the flower bed, a shoe print. A bloody shoe print on a sheet, a shoe print in wet concrete. And they just start seeing these and they kind of correlate and they're like, oh my God, this is the same size shoe. This dude has been in all these spots. And they
9.5.
It's 11.5.
It's
my size. And so what it ended up being was
that.
I told you, I know this case so well. I feel like a nerd. It was in, I'm gonna pronounce this wrong. Avia shoe, I believe it's
Avia.
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 Avia. And they met. They actually, the detectives on the case met with the creator of this shoe in Portland, Oregon, where they looked at like samples of shoe soles, and they were able to figure out what type it was. Then they were able to use spreadsheet sale data to find that, you know, on this date, they only six of these black shoes entered the U.S. because they knew it was black from those people who stayed alive. And then five of them went to Arizona and only one pair went to L.A. So they knew this one guy had this one pair of these black shoes.
It's pretty impressive.
And it's just,
it's crazy.
Wild.
Back then.
Yeah.
Like today, it'd be like, oh, no big deal, right?
Pull up the Excel spreadsheet and have the AI search through.
Yeah, of course. Right?
This is like,
so, totally and then, yeah. like, and he was also good. He always wore gardener gloves. They never found a single fingerprint at the scene of the crimes. And he would make himself comfortable. He'd make dinner. He'd have a snack. He'd steal their stuff. Like, weirdo. But they never found a print, nothing.
They probably also didn't have the technology. Because if he's in the house cooking, they got to be able to get a fingerprint.
Yeah, well, this is the 80s.
Grabbing the olive oil. There's a
somewhere. EVVO definitely gets the...
Yes. And it's just so interesting of after they have this break of the shoe print, it takes so long for them to finally catch him because somehow this guy just kept getting away. And so there was one night he was leaving the scene of a crime. He just murdered somebody. And as he was driving away in a stolen car.
With a knife.
Or a gun. He does both.
Oh. Ooh.
Again, like all over the place.
That's not normal.
It's not.
I mean,
he's an
imp. No one is
killing
normal.
Killing people is
yeah.
not normal.
Like normally you have your signature. That was the thing, right? He yeah. had no signature.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was pulled over for a traffic violation. And
VTL.
Like which one? 118LD? Like, and he had no license on him. So the cop actually pulled him from the vehicle, had him put his palms on the hood of the car, and they patted him down and to see if he had any type of weapons. And when the cop went back to the motorcycle to write him like a citation, over the radio, he hears this stolen car just left the scene of a murder. And so Richard stood there.
She calls him Rich.
We're on a nickname.
She's got a nickname basis. So well. Rich.
Richard.
He's a dick.
He drew a pentagram on the hood of the car, ran, got away, completely got away. So, and I don't understand because the cop was on a motorcycle, so I didn't know how you couldn't have like vroom vroomed.
Vroom vroom.
I think he may not have paid as close of attention as maybe.
Yes. And so after that, you know, they took that car, they were going to process it and things like that. But the LAPD just left it.
Sounds like the
out
LAPD.
In a parking lot. You know, the sun burnt up all the leather because this is the 80s. You know, you got leather seats and things like that. So like there was,
you have leather seats and
well,
I knew you were going to say that.
Whatever.
It was probably more like a pleather, which expands when it's warm out.
Carfax with Sean Kelsey.
Next episode.
But so like they couldn't pull any prints anymore, things like that. But they found, and here's where the teeth comes in. Mm. They found a dentist card in the on the passenger seat floor.
Hold on. This is gonna get good. Let her go. This is gonna
I
get
told
good.
Him about this part. So they found a dentist card in there. And so
for a dentist appointment.
Yes. Okay. So they go to the dental office and when they go there and talk to them, Richard had pulled up to this dental office on July 3rd. It is now July 8th. They missed him by like 5 days. So they pull up his x-rays and they're looking at it. And the dentist is like, he's going to be back here. He has some type of impacted tooth. He's going to have a lot of pain. He will be back. So they, for a few days, leave cop station there, like staying there waiting for him. And then, you know, the overheads, they're like, this is a waste of our money. So the LAPD puts a burglary alarm in the dental office. Like, so, you know,
if someone in.
Because the guy who's been getting around all those fancy alarms and then all the other people's houses.
Well,
no, it's an alarm so that.
Like, they can, under the table.
Like a bank yeah, alarm.
Like the bank alarm.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
So they pop that in there, and the very, very first day.
So they leave.
Yes.
Install that. They're gone now.
The
next day.
The very first day after they pull the officers from in there. He shows up. They're hitting the buzzer. 10 p.m. that night.
Can you imagine? You're at the front desk. Your job is if you see this guy who has been killing multiple people, hit the button. Nope.
10.
I'm out.
Yeah.
P.S. I give my notice.
Yeah.
I give my notice.
10 p.m. that night, the dentist calls and they go, "Where were you?" And he's like, "What
time was the alarm tripped?"
I don't know the time.
But okay. This is
it was during
LAPD.
The day.
Classic
it was during
LAPD.
The day.
Let's but, say it was 4:30.
So, yeah. They're hitting
the alarm. Fact check us online. Let us know.
They're hitting the alarm. Nothing happens. The doctor calls that night and they're like,
why does the doctor wait until 10 o'clock to call?
Yeah,
I'm on the phone with that.
Phone?
Yeah.
Multiple balls were dropped in this.
So, and the detective's like, what are you talking about? They're like, he was here. We hit the wire. The way that it was installed, there was some sort of faulty wires. They never got notified he was there. Oh, they missed him. again. So once again, he gets away. This is now like two times in a row where they have had him and he got away. And what ended up happening was some daughter calls the hotline. They're still trying to get more and more information about this man. A daughter calls the hotline. She goes, I believe my father is friends with this man. And so they go out and they talk to him and he goes, yeah, I'm friends with a guy named Rick from El Paso. He told me about how he killed this one couple with a gun in this area. And the police are like, we never released that type of information of how they were killed, where it was, like things.
How
like
long
that.
Did he like, did like Rick tell them and then he called the cops, or was it like a couple of weeks later? Be like, oh, by the way,
I don't know. So, people. And then also, Rick had given this new friend the gun he used in that murder.
In the fridge?
Not the one
not
in
the fridge.
Not the fridge. No, the fridge. Oh, the fridge was cousin Miguel.
Oh, Miguel. Yeah, psycho
no,
Miguel.
The gun he used to just like kill a couple.
Yeah, okay.
He gave it to him. And then he just
nice
like
gift.
He just like sold it to someone in Tijuana. That's real. That's real.
Tijuana?
Tijuana.
Mexico's like 2 hours away. Oh, gosh. From it's pretty easy trip.
And so, and also he had a boombox that was like taken in one of the robberies he did of the houses.
Like so, one of these boomboxes?
Yeah, like this is the 80s. Like a boombox.
I'm liking
boombox.
It. I'm so liking
they're,
it.
They're able to, without, you know, any information that's been given out, connect like this is this dude. This is him. And so they connect it through other people and they find someone who's his friend and they finally get out of him the name, Richard Ramirez. From there, they're able to pull up a booking photo.
Go ahead.
From there, they're able to, you know, like figure out this matches the sketch and here's a print and here's a print and they connect and like all of these things.
I have questions.
Okay.
Did Dennis not have his name?
Yeah. That's oh, right. No. He gave a fake name. I have it written down.
I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you going to do this?
He gave his name as Richard Mana with a bad address, like a fake address.
Oh, okay.
Did they not check IDs back then or like insurance?
It's the 80s.
It's the 80s. It's a little more chill back then.
Oh, okay.
So,
Rowan, I'm with you.
And the date of arrest, you know, they finally have his picture posted. He was arrested 8 months prior on some petty larceny, whatever. But they have a mugshot of him.
The gateway arrest.
It's such a Florida thing.
And so they have his mugshot out there, front page of the paper. Like, here's the Night Stalker. This is him.
Oh, it gets good.
And so, he's on a bus, and he notices.
Doesn't matter where. You'll find out where he's going.
And so, well, no. First and foremost, he walks into a liquor store. And in that liquor store, he sees the rack of newspapers. Boom, his face. 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 Dang. He's like, uh-oh.
Gigs up.
Skedaddles out of there.
I'm going to leave the Cheetos today. I'll be back.
Yeah. So,
I'm going to pass on the Cheetos.
Yeah. So he then hops on a bus. His brother lives 8 miles away in like East Los Angeles, whatever. He's got 8 miles. He can get to his brother. He can be safe. He's good. On the bus, he notices the dude sitting right next to him, kind of looking at the paper and looking at him, being like, He pulls the little thing to get the bus to stop, hops out, boom, payphone right there. Ring-a-ding-ding. We got him. So then Richard hops off the bus, bolts, starts running. He ends up, like, crossing over a freeway. Through like four
like
lanes.
A freeway.
Like a freeway.
Like a freeway.
Like an 8-lane highway.
In case you didn't get it, a freeway. So four lanes of traffic, this man's hopping over, running through to get away. And he ends up in a neighborhood and he's trying to carjack and steal people's cars and like try and get away in the neighborhood. Literally, they grab like crowbars and they beat him up.
Yeah.
Like the neighbors.
That's great.
I thought you were going to say he was going to fall and chip a tooth. Gonna go back to the dentist.
No, they like literally beat him up and the neighbors end up crowding around him, caging him in. And he's just sits on the sidewalk and waits for the cops to get him.
Yeah,
and he gets taken. At that point, yeah, you have
to. He was tired of running. He gets taken.
Arrested.
And, you know, he was idolized in jail because apparently some people thought he was hot. Not my type.
If he smiles, probably not. Probably better if he doesn't smile.
As he was actively being driven to the station, a woman stood on the top of her car and opened up her blouse and gave him a little show.
Do you think he could use his commissary for veneers?
Maybe.
Can you get that kind of stuff in jail?
He is, in fact.
I mean, he's not that bad.
Did he get veneers?
Yeah, maybe in prison.
I think he got teeth.
He got teeth done.
Like, he's got a good jawbone.
But he has like those dead eyes.
I mean,
because he's dead eyed.
Yeah. So, he did end up dying in jail from, I believe,
cancer.
Some form of, I believe, lymphoma.
Yep.
Did he do life?
He was gonna.
He got the death penalty.
Yes, yeah. But he didn't even get.
He died in Quentin. Mm.
Dang.
So that case is just the way it's. Easy. It was so hard to connect it. The way they were able to connect it. Those so many missed opportunities. What happened to him as a kid. Like, I've just always been so fascinated by this case.
What was the time span before the first time they tried to catch him and when they actually did? Was this, like, months or years?
Yeah, that's the question I want. Like, the setup at the dentist until he got caught. How many days?
I believe, and I could be wrong.
Prove it wrong.
I believe we're looking at 1 to 2 weeks.
Okay, so let's say...
I believe...
On the light end, it's 5 days. Did he kill anybody in the 5 days?
Yes.
He did?
That's crazy.
And by the way, the LAPD has been known for incompetence. And, like, this was one of those cases they really dropped the ball.
Yeah, with,
like,
the whole car and really the prints example. And the wires.
That's crazy.
And
that's crazy.
Why was he doing the symbol things?
The pentagram?
Yeah.
So when I had to do my research paper on him, I read a book by someone who interviewed him in jail. And he kind of talked about, he had all these religious aspects of a kid and of, you know, praising God and, you know, serving God and things like that. And then as he got older from his cousin and things like that, he started having all of these perverse thoughts of, you know, I want to do drugs. And he had drug use, you know, all around him of heroin and coke and things like that. And I want to hurt people. I see the way these women were hurt and I want to do that. And he's like, well, God wouldn't accept me for that. But you know who would? Satan. And so there flips him into this whole, you know, devil worship and pentagrams and things like that.
He probably got it from Miguel.
Probably. Yeah. Who keeps a gun in the fridge?
Miguel's not a good dude. You don't keep a gun in a fridge?
Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah. It was safe.
It was satanic panic.
Yeah.
It was that period of time where, like, even, like, anything in the subculture came out, and Richard Ramirez is a part of that for sure. He fueled the fear of, like,
yeah, with Charles Manson and all of that.
Oh, Dungeons and Dragons, a whole bunch of the other satanic stuff.
Was this the same time as, like, Manson, or was it, like, a little bit? Wasn't it a little bit?
Well, after Manson.
Yeah.
This was the 80s, like 84, 85. Like
15 to 20 years after.
He didn't even do this for, like, that long. I believe it was the tail end of 84, and then I believe he was caught in either July or August of 85.
Hey, let me ask you this. Which case of the three that we talked about is most disturbing for you? Ryan?
I'm going to stake mine as the most disturbing because it's the most applicable. I think that most people might...
When you say mine...
I mean, I think a lot of people have...
You mean Rodney King?
Rodney King. The Rodney King case, because I think it's way more likely that you're going to have a traffic stop go haywire than a serial killer killing you. I think the lessons learned from it are more broadly applied, but that's the only reason I think society learned.
You know, I actually agree with you, but I agree with you from a different perspective. And again, I'm not trying to take away from what Richard Ramirez and Ed Gein did, but there's clearly all of these influences that created the monsters, right? And again, not okay, right? What happened with Rodney King was people that were supposed to be upholding the justice. And that, to me, is why it's the most appalling one in the group. Now, it's not the most scary, right? Like, obviously, again, taking bodies and going over there.
I'd rather get beat by a cop than run into Richard Ramirez.
Again.
again. On our next podcast.
But yeah, 100%. Yes, but to me, you're dealing with, and again, I'm not saying that the police don't have medical or mental health issues. I'm sure they probably did. To beat somebody like that, you can't be all that stable from there anyways. What about you?
I'm going to agree. Just because
that's it. She agreed. Okay. Mark it down. Recorded. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm going to agree just because, you know, it's so common for cases like the one I talked about or the one Rowan talked about to be one-offs. Unless you have copycat killers, they don't really repeat. And, you know, what happened to Rodney, we've seen it within our own history of recent years. It happens again and again and again. And it's just...
Yeah,
when you see it every decade, right? Like, you see it every decade. And that's the sad thing is that we're still learning. We're still trying to figure that out.
Ron, what's your thoughts? I'm going to give you the last words.
Oh, wow.
have it be like the toast at the holiday party where it goes on and on.
I watched back the video and it was only 2 minutes and like 30 seconds.
So it felt like 45 minutes.
It was debrief. Okay.
Oh, snap, snap.
I would say, I don't know, it's tough because all three of them are just horrifying in their own rights. I mean, Richard Ramirez, a 9-year-old girl, like, you know what I'm saying? Or even an 80-year-old just like, just going on rampages, like you're just having dinner with
scary
your
dude.
Yeah, that he's just breaking your house. Oh my gosh.
Cooks dinner.
And then Ed Gein, it's like, right. Like,
at least cooked dinner first.
Like, I was saving that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you've got Ed Gein where he's, Ed Gein is probably the most that I cannot understand. Like, how somebody could do that. Like, I mean, dead bodies is just insane. And then...
Yeah, can you imagine? It's got to be dirty and gross and smelly. Like,
yeah, and it's like...
It has to really be your thing.
You think he smells like mothballs?
No.
Probably worse.
Smells like dead.
They said that his house was just like... horrific.
Probably smelled it like a tannery. Like
stuff everywhere. Nobody cleaned up because his mom had done all of that.
Yeah, of course. And the girlfriend or wife in the movie didn't exist.
Right. Because
she came clean, but she didn't exist.
But I would say, I would agree. Rodney King is just, it's so horrific. And then all of the cases that we've seen, and then maybe even people that we know in our real lives that are friends or loved ones that have gone through something like that. And even in today's day and age, maybe not to that gruesome extent, thank God. But, you know, it's just terrifying to think that people have to go through that or be, you know, extremely cautious. If they run a red light or accidentally make a mistake, you don't know if you're going to make it home to your family. Yeah. So it's pretty scary. But I would say all three of them are just, we went through them all.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we can say.
Yeah, we got a little bit of everything here.
Yep.
Well. Thanks for tuning in to Debrief, where justice, the truth, is rarely off the record. Thank you. See you next month.
Thank you.
Go Bills!